listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Catch Them Doing Something Good edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to noon, my guest and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I am thrilled to have as our guest today, author and inspirational speaker, Julie Ziegler Norman. Julie is the daughter of inspirational author and speaker, Zig Ziegler. Since September of 2007, Julie and her father have presented their interview on Embrace the Struggle, Living Life on Life's Terms to over 400,000 individuals at the Get Motivated seminars, as well as co-authoring a book by the same name. Julie gives inspirational speeches on accepting, embracing, and overcoming issues that keep men and women from having a joyous and fulfilling life. As someone who has attended multiple seminars by her father, I'm happy to meet and know that, Julie, you and your brother, Tom, are continuing the great work that your father started so many years ago. Julie, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. I'm just delighted to be here.
Well, again, I said, having attended the seminars, I know that it is something that has affected my life. I know I have friends, family, I know that it's affected their life, and so I'm just happy to be able to get the word out there and hopefully bring some of that same positive energy to everybody else out there.
Well, my dad has been, I would call him a professional encourager. It comes from the heart, but he feels like it's the most important thing that he can do is encourage others and help them see that they can change the circumstances they're in if they, you know, if they need to and want to. It is possible, and that he feels there are far too many people who never hear an encouraging word, and that's what he's been about all these years.
Well, now, for those that aren't familiar with him, can you tell the audience, again, I'm aware of it, but tell the audience a little bit about your dad and also bring us up to date, because I don't think they realize that it actually, originally when we set this up, I mean, he was going to join us as well, but he is having some health issues. So can you bring us up to date?
Yes. Well, let me bring you up to date. Dad started, actually, I believe he became a full-time speaker pretty much in 1970-71. In his first book, See You at the Top, he put out, I believe it was 73, under the title Biscuits, Fleas, and Pump Handles, and then later a publisher picked it up. But he is, I guess today, considered the icon of motivational, inspirational speaking. He's 83 years old. He has spoken all over this world. His 29 books are in, 33 or 4 different languages and dialects. He is just known as the motivator's motivator, quite honestly. But 3 years ago, matter of fact, it was March 7th, 2007, Dad took a fall down the stairs in his home, and he sustained a serious brain injury. And the immediate and profound result of that, Alan, was short-term memory loss. I mean, Dad had been in San Bernardino speaking that day. He'd had a great day on the stage. You wouldn't have known he was a day over 55. And the next morning, his memory was so short, it was just on a loop. At the time, they didn't know how much healing would occur. Ultimately, we found out that he also had gotten water on the brain, hydrocephalus, and they installed a shunt about a year after the fall. Unfortunately, by then, the pressure had kind of made the damage permanent. Now, he can still get up and tell the inspirational stories that he has always told, but he can't carry the train of thought like he used to, so that's why I assist him on stage with an interview format I've been his editor for almost 17 years now, and I know all of his stories by heart. So if he gets to a place and he can't recall something, I can finish the story. But for the most part, he gets up there and just goes to town, and I might have to let him know that he's already said something, and we'll move on to another topic. But that is how we've been getting around the short-term memory problem, is with me up there with him. But of late, it's just been a little harder for him to stay on track when I'm not sitting right next to him to kind of steer him back on course. So that's why he's not on this radio interview with us, but he's still making it onto the public stages.
Well, I think that's phenomenal that he can still do that. In fact, as you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, maybe you can travel around with me because I haven't taken any fall and I haven't sustained any sort of accident. But at the same time, I think I'm sustaining a little bit of short-term memory loss myself.
You know, I think all of us feel that way. And some people, when, you know, he starts to repeat himself, they say, well, he's always done that. And, you know, one of the reasons he did it on purpose is because you need to hear something several times before it sinks in. So when we're in front of a crowd and he starts into the same thing maybe for the third time, I just stop him and I say, you know, we've discovered that when Dad repeats it for the third time, that means there are people in this particular audience who really need this particular information, and they all get a kick out of that. But it's true. We hear from people all the time. They say, you know, I didn't hear him the first time he said it or the second time, but the third time I realized he was talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how even in this state, actually he's inspiring a whole different group of people. The people today who see him and admire what he's doing are the ones who are struggling with similar issues, who, in light of what they see him doing, know that they need to find a way to continue to do what they've always loved to do and just look at different options the way he has.
Well, let me ask you this. What came first then, the book, Embrace the Struggle, or his accident?
The accident came, and at the time, we were finishing we'd done a 3-book contract, and he was writing a book called Creative Imagination when he had his fall. And it didn't take us 2 months to figure out that the real inspiring story was the one he was living out day to day. And that was how he was personally dealing with all of the changes in his life and keeping a great attitude. And as he would say, he was choosing to respond instead of react to what had happened to him. And he was just living out the principles he has taught all of these years. And so we knew that. I knew that was the story. And I begged him. And I talked to the publisher, and I said, can we please change, you know, this book title? And it took my brother visiting with Dad and Mom at length, because, you know, a lot of people are a little hesitant to talk about things like this, especially
sure.
when it comes to memory loss. But
sure.
my dad has always been, I would call him... one of the first people to just put it all out there. My mother used to just grimace when he would talk about, you know, that he's had to turn cars back in. He's had his lights turned out. And, you know, that was their early years when he was trying to learn how to be a salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to embarrass her. But Daddy assured her that people needed to know that he had had that experience too, you know, and he could understand the struggle. So this book is a result of, I think, pretty much my brother and I just being amazed at how he was dealing with his circumstances and knowing full well that when other people saw him in a tough spot and saw him dealing with it the way he chose to deal with it, they would be inspired too. And that's exactly what's happened.
Well, and I think it also, it just reinforces his message. I mean, when he's presented this message for, 38 years or so, if he's this just reinforces the same message when he's telling other people that they can get through things, you know, that if they're going through something, they can get through it. I mean, what better way to be able to say, and I'm showing you that I do it as well. And that's pretty powerful.
It's extremely powerful. And I see the tears, you know, we're on stage together. I see the tears, and the tears, there may be some of sadness that, you know, that he doesn't have the same ability to run around the stage that he used to. And the main reason is he still does have a little vertigo from the fall. But it's just people admire him so much for not quitting. One of the stories that I like to tell, because it says a lot about who my father is probably 25 years ago, he set all of his children down and he asked us to please let him know if he ever started losing the ability to clearly communicate from the platform. He had known some people he felt like should have retired a little sooner than they did. So we had already started going and listening, you know, being there in person occasionally to adhere to his wishes, to be sure he was still on track and doing well. And we'd been doing that a couple of years before the fall happened. Mm-hmm. But after the fall happened, all he could think about was that he had these commitments he already had, and how was he going to keep them? And that's when he came up with Peter Lowe, who has Get Motivated seminars, suggested that as a way to just continue on and make those next appointments, commitments that he had. But it was under any other circumstance other than a fall, if he were doing what he does now, we would have said, Dad, it's time to step down. Mm-hmm. But because of the fall, it was an obvious accident. It was an obvious brain injury. And all he needed was somebody to help guide him a little bit through the process. And he still delivers some of the most inspiring information you'll get off any public speaking stage. So, I hate to think that, he would have quit under other circumstances. But he's just going on and letting other people see that it's okay not to be all you once were, as long as you're being all you can be. That's and, right. You know, you shouldn't be ashamed of the things that you can't control like that. Now, we know full well that the day is going to come where, you know, he's going to need to step down, because the day will come when he really can't inspire in the same way he used to. And at that point, you know, you need your audience to be the winners. Right. It's not about you, it's about them. So he knows that day is coming. And you know what he says?
What's that? He says,
you know, it's really something to think about the end of the career. He said, it's been so wonderful. But when I think of what I have to look forward to, he said, I just get so excited, because the Lord's been preparing my home for a long, long time. And that's his attitude. He's always looking forward to the next great thing.
Well, and it's a beautiful attitude. But, you know, going on the basis of all things happening for a reason, maybe this is why you got prepared. You know, in other words, how were you chosen to be the one who would travel and interview your father on stage? I mean, that if that wasn't in the cards before the accident, maybe this is part of the preparation that was meant for you.
Oh, when I look back at the handiwork, I can see how everything has been orchestrated to make this just exactly like it is, because I never had any aspirations whatsoever to be in the public or on the stage. My work has been at home alone in a corner editing, you know, all hours of the day and night by myself, very quiet. But it so happened that we had a Born to Win, which was a 3-day course that Daddy loved to teach in Dallas. He'd have everybody over to his home who signed up the first night, you know, kind of as a mixer, and come and greet Gene and Zig at the house. And he just loved that 3 days. And he would get to speak to them about, you know, a balanced life and how to have all of the different things you need to be balanced and to be fulfilled and happy. And he adored it, but it was time to let that go, because it was just 3 days is too long for an 80-year-old man with brain injury to keep doing that. So we had a final Born to Win, and we decided to close that session with the whole family on stage telling real special memories of Dad. And that's when somebody, oh, I know, it was the young man, a seminary student who was driving Dad places he needed to go, suggested that he thought I would be the best option for asking Dad questions and doing the interviewing because I know all of his material. And I don't know why we hadn't thought of that earlier, but it took Jay Helwig at, you know, pointing it out. And when they asked me if I would do it, I said yes, because quite some time ago, I had determined, my pastor had taught us, that you don't have to worry about what your purpose is. God will put it in front of you. What you have to do is be willing, be available, and then be obedient to do what's put in front of you. So when they asked me if I'd do it, I said sure. You know, I didn't worry about getting up in front of 20,000 people at a time or how it would go or if I could. I just knew that Dad needed me. Mm-hmm. And it's been fine. It's not anything by my own power, but consequently, you know, I've been invited to speak many places, as has my brother Tom. And neither one of us had any designs on speaking, but it's quite obvious now that we're being put in a position to continue to carry our Dad's message forward into this next generation.
Well, and I'm very thankful that you are, and I think this next generation needs more people like you. It needs more people, obviously, like your dad. Now, again, being somebody who's already a fan of your dad and's already gone to some of the seminars, give us more from the behind-the-scenes part. Tell us why you think that he was able to be so successful, and not just with, you know, the average guy, you know, the average woman, the average person, but even with the people who are leaders amongst society, even people who are also motivators in themselves, I know have turned to him. Give us a little bit of the insight as to why you think he was able to be that person.
I believe Dad is rigorously honest, and he has always believed that the truth was paramount. And he's a great student. If he didn't know something, he would do the studying he needed to find out. His work ethic, I don't know anybody who can beat that man's work ethic. He's passionate, and since the very first time he heard a speech that motivated him and made him feel like if he thought differently and approach things differently, he could have a different outcome. He became passionate about encouraging people to be all they can be. He just, you know, I really think it was what he has been tasked with. And even though he will tell you that his career really did not take hold and take off until after he became a Christian, the work ethic he had, what he put into learning how to be a good communicator, to build up to the place where he could speak publicly, was incredible. I don't know, he spoke thousands of times, you know, just on a volunteer basis at Lions clubs, anywhere they'd let him come, so that he could practice just being in front of people. And he kind of learned, you know, what things make them laugh and how often you need to kind of give them a break with laughter and that sort of thing. And he just paid so much attention to people and how they respond and how they react and what motivates people to make better choices for themselves. He was a student of being a student. And he still is. He still reads 3 hours a day. He might read the same page several times over because yeah, he's forgotten he just read it. But for Dad, it's always about continuing to learn and add new information to what you've already got. But I really think, Alan, he is so well respected because he's always been honest. He's been faithful to his wife. He's been honest in his business dealings. His integrity is unquestionable. He's just so well respected because of the kind of moral individual that he is.
Well, and I mean, that's inspiring in itself, because I mean, that is what we need. That's what we need as models. You know, if we can get more people to see that by showing integrity, by being honest, by being trustworthy, that you can have such an incredibly wonderful and successful life. I think that if we could, I mean, this would be the type of program we need to get it into the schools. You know, let's get it to the kids a little bit younger. I mean, I got into it as an adult, but I can see where if you can get this message out, you know, maybe starting at the junior high level, get the message out. I think we can elicit just huge change. So and.
Yes, we've seen that. And Dad actually has a course called the I Can course that he worked diligently for years to get in the school systems, and many, many of the school systems did adopt it. And a guy named Bob Alexander still has that course available, and it is all of the principles I was just talking about. And I meet they're not kids now. I meet young adults who went to the I Can class, whose lives are completely different because of what they learned in that class about how they can, you know, you've got to put good stuff in to get good stuff out, and you can make choices that just make your life better. And that's such a simple thing, but children aren't taught that. They don't know, you know, it's not a natural thing to be taught unless their parents, you know, are students of that kind of thing. They don't get it at school. But the I Can course, you know, I really wish we'd been able to get it in more schools. But you'd be surprised how many schools are kind of against good thinking. I'm laughing, but it's not funny.
Yeah, I know it's not funny. I know that we do have some teachers. We have some school administrators, educational consultants, some SELPA coordinators that have all emailed us, that have said that they are listeners. So if you're listening out there, get it into your school. Call me. Call Julie. If there's a way that we can help you get it into the school, get it into the school, because we will do what we can to support it. Now, one of the things that I want to do, I want to make sure that I ask some of the questions that have come in. We get questions that are emailed in ahead of time, and I think the people that do that realize that I'm not the most technically advanced person, so sometimes if they call in, I don't exactly handle it right. So we ask that they email them in. Well, here's one that came in I'll read it the way in which they have written it, because I think it's coming from someone that's struggling right now. So it says, I am a single parent and have gotten to the age where my children have recently left the home and my parents are needing much help. I am trying to embrace the struggle, but wonder when I can take care of me.
Oh, yes, that's an extremely important issue. I like to talk about that time as a season. You know, they are in a season of life where all the demands, it's just, you go from one place taking care of your children to your parents, then having great needs. And I would recommend, you know, respite care if it's available through home health care. You know, we children have had to encourage our mother to get a little bit of help so that she can get out and run errands easily and that sort of thing, because, you know, with Dad's head injury, she's with him 24/7, and you don't realize, especially we're talking about a lady who lived alone, you know, 5 or 6 days a week while her husband traveled the world, and then all of a sudden one fall and now they're together 24/7, and we've just recently convinced her to let a gentleman come and take Dad down to work out and get his, you know, his cardio training in and do some other health type things while she goes and runs around. But I think you have to carve out that little bit of time for yourself. And I know, you know, it's hard when you're exhausted to get up a little bit earlier, but you got to have that quiet time to do things for yourself and to meditate and to pray and to just let go, because, you know, of our own power, we just wear out. We just wear out and wear down. We've also got to become interdependent. Yep. And ask other people for the help we need. And if you have friends, you have children, obviously your children or their children are grown, it's all right to ask them to help with parents too. So I think the hardest thing in the world to do is learn that you can ask for help. You need to ask for help. And if you don't, you don't get it. You don't get the breaks you need. So in a way, we're a little bit responsible for taking care of ourselves in that respect.
Well, I'm sure there's a few people in my family and in my life that are probably taking notes and saying that, that once I get off the air, they're going to tell me to make sure that I take this advice myself. because I as much as I know better, I find myself doing the same thing. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I understand completely. And I hope, again, in this listener, you know, and I hope that that helps. You know, but if you feel like that, you know, you need to talk to somebody again, you know, find a good therapist, find somebody that you can talk to, you know, on a regular basis that can continually remind you of this, because, I mean, hearing it once or twice may not be enough for it to sink in. So, you know, go ahead and do that or just get the book. And again, I'm going to ask some questions here about the book now. So, you know, as you hear that, if this is something that you want later on, we'll tell you how you can get that as well. And speaking of the struggles, I mean, we know why you started writing the book in regards to the personal struggle, but what types of struggles are addressed in the book, Embrace the Struggle?
Well, over the course of going around with Dad, I just ran into so many people who were actually physically there and wanted to share their experience of how they've embraced their struggles. And that's where the majority of these stories came from. But we ended up with a book that covers struggles from all the way from a drug addiction to adult children with Alzheimer's, a mother with Alzheimer's, people who were born with physical disabilities, like my niece Elizabeth, who was born with mental insufficiencies and also some small motor issues, who will never live outside of a group home, and how do you go about accepting and then dealing with that. There are stories about single mothers and mothers who weren't able to have children, divorcees. We cover marriage struggles, infidelity, marriages that have embraced the struggle and survived infidelity. It's amazing. Spiritual struggles, illness, and grief. And somebody once wrote and asked me, they said, you know, all of these struggles are huge that you write about in the book. How can someone who's just dealing with smaller issues, what are they going to get out of it? And I said, well, if you read the book, you'll end up with a whole lot of gratitude because you don't have the same level of struggle. You know, of course, whatever you're struggling with is big to you in that moment.
No,
but the answers on how you deal with the struggles, large or small, are the same.
No, and I agree as well. But I think that's a great point. And as you were getting there, I didn't think about it, but that's a great point is, as you read about, and sometimes it's one of the benefits you get when you talk to people about their struggles, is you realize that some of the little things that you're dealing with maybe aren't as bad as you really think. So I appreciate you sharing that. Now we're going to take a break. We are talking with Julie Ziegler-Norman, and the book is called Embrace the Struggle. And Julie, when we come back from the break, I'd like to ask you a little bit about the struggles that you face personally.
Certainly. Be happy to talk about that.
All right. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put,
West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back, and we are talking with Julie Ziegler-Norman, and the book is Embrace the Struggle. So, Julie, before we went to break, I asked you, are you willing to share with us some of the struggles that you've faced and how you've gotten through them?
Definitely. And, a lot of people are pretty amazed that a child of Zig Ziglar's, the most positive man on earth, could have made so many bad choices. And I can tell you, I made them all by myself without his consent or knowledge. People want to know where my parents were when I was making these choices. And my father really was on the road 5 to 6 days a week. And my mother was taking care of my little brother, Tom, who was a toddler when I reached my teen years. He was born almost 10 years after me. So, plus, I look like a really well-rounded, very responsible young person. I started working early when I was 14. I made good grades. I never skipped school. There was nothing outward to indicate that I was having any problems of any kind. So my parents were pretty clueless, and I tried very hard to keep them that way. The first issue began when Dad moved us from South Carolina to Dallas because of his career. And the transition did not go well. I was 13, and we were told the week before, I guess, my eighth grade year, that we were going to be moved. And I did not fit in. South Carolina was backward compared to Dallas, and I had been somewhat accepted there. I was on student council and had a lot of friends, and moved to Dallas, and I was ridiculed for my accent and a little football player like me anyway, and a girl started some rumors that just weren't true, and before it was all over with, they were all true. And what happened was there was a group of kids who were willing for me to be their friend, but part of the initiation to be in their group was I had to surrender my virginity, which at that time I didn't know what that was, but I did know that I was tired of not having any friends. And that was just the beginning of a whole lot of bad choices, and I ended up with a lot of feelings that I didn't know what to do with. I had been raised so positive that I believed if I could just think better, that things would be better. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't think about the hurt and the pain and the shame and remorse and all that went with the choices I had made and was making. And consequently, the first drink of alcohol I had, I discovered some relief. Mm-hmm. And I began to, my first drink turned into a blackout drunk, which I now know is pretty common for people who end up growing up to be alcoholics like I did.
Right.
My drinking was sketchy pretty much until I became a single parent. I got divorced by the time I was 21. I married a guy twice my age when I was 18. He was 36, and I married him against my parents' wishes. I was desperately wanting someone to take control of my life, and he was more than willing to do it. Mm. And as you can figure, that really ended up not working out well. He ended up beating me. Oh. And my dad had said if we ever married, the only reasons we could come home was if our husband became a habitual adulterer. And that means, anybody mess up once or maybe twice or whatever, and you can forgive and move on. There's always hope. But he just couldn't stand the thought of anybody hitting any of his children. Sure. Two of his sisters had been in abusive relationships. And so when my daughter was 5 weeks old, my husband lost control, and it took me until she was 3 months old to find a way to leave the home. But I was a single mom for 7 years, and it was during that 7 years that my drinking escalated. I was alone at home, and started keeping alcohol under the sink, and ultimately married a man who liked to drink as well. And by the grace of God, I'll, this May will be sober 24 years. So that's the good news.
Yes, it is.
Yes, but, you know, I just lived a very secretive life. I worked all the time. I was seldom home. I was always very, very busy. And, you know, I kind of flew under the radar. So Mom and Dad really didn't know what all I was going through.
Now you,
they just didn't see it.
Now, you mentioned, I mean, in the beginning, as you started to make this shift in regards to the just starting drinking and just giving up your virginity, and you mentioned that you still had been given so much of this positive thinking, and I'm not sure if I understood it, but are you saying that you were able to just sort of switch this into your mind, and you could convince yourself that this was all a positive move?
No. What I'm saying is I felt so responsible for, you know, what I had done. I was having very bad feelings about the choices I was making. I had the very sinking self-image,
gotcha.
Shame, guilt, grief, but I did not know how to deal with those kind of feelings. And I believed if I could just change the way I thought, that the feelings would go away. But see, I was still doing the behaviors.
Gotcha.
That's why just thinking positive about it didn't cure it, because I was still into the behavior,
right.
and doing the destructive things.
Right.
So,
and it also sounds like what you're saying is that that as far as your self-worth felt worse because of the fact that you knew that it was wrong, because you'd been raised to know that. You knew that it wasn't positive. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, I wish I could say that, Alan, but the truth is nobody had ever told me anything about sex or that it existed or that you should wait, or, you know, it just wasn't a topic that ever came up in our home. And where I lived, it never came up in school or anything else either, because I guess we were just behind the power curve, or
just sheltered.
I don't want to call that a power curve, but it was a different society that I grew up in compared to the speed with which Dallas kids, they were wearing mini skirts, and my skirts were below the knee when I moved to Texas.
Okay.
I mean, it was culture shock. They were doing drugs here. And we weren't even doing alcohol there, you know, at that age. So it was kind of like being the biggest, most naive nerd in the world, and all of a sudden living in the wolf's den.
Wow.
You know, it just, I wasn't prepared.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't prepared. I didn't have the tools to say no, because I was up against stuff I didn't even know existed. Really didn't know it existed in me. I knew I was making choices my parents wouldn't like. I just had not been told that these things might come up, and that when they did, you should just say no. You know, that's, believe me, my children probably heard more than they needed to about things they ought to not do, and things that would come up, and how everybody's not always going to be having your best interest at heart. And, you know, I tried to prepare them in a way. But, you know, my parents were they came from a naive time,
mm-hmm.
where things just like that just didn't happen. It just wasn't commonplace.
Right.
So, and, you know, my mother told me she's so sorry that we were ill-equipped for what we faced here. But believe me, she was no better prepared than I was for the difference, you know, when we came here.
Right, and I think that's one of the things that parents have to do to forgive themselves, is to understand that you have probably done the best that you can with the tools that you were given. And in each generation, we're given a certain amount of tools, but things continue to change. So, yeah, you're right. Your mom can't beat herself up over it. you know, as
that's right.
Nor can you or me or any of the rest of us. But what I would like to do is now tell me or tell us what is right about your life today. Or actually, why don't you hold that thought? We have a call coming
okay.
in, so let me see if I can get this. I have to add to conference. And hi, you're on with Julie Ziegler Norman on Answers for the Family.
Hi, Julie. This is Allison. I had a question about your children and how they adjusted to all these problems, and you know what's been the outcome with your children.
Allison, it's a really amazing story. All of my children are well adjusted. None of them, though I did have a couple of them experiment with drugs. They got past that at a fairly early age. The main one I was afraid I might lose to gang type situations. She's a missionary and has been for 12 years, and she's in South Central Mexico. I got sober and my husband got sober early enough that they were it was a little hard for them when we first got sober, because all of a sudden we were very aware of everything that was going on in their lives. And so we were able to stop a lot of things that might have happened had we continued to drink. But they got to see us learn how to live sober and be happy. They also got to see us struggle with how do you communicate sober when you've only known each other, with alcohol in the mix. And so they got to see us work on our marriage relationship and save that marriage and keep the commitment. So what my children know today is that with faith and hard work and perseverance, that you can create a very happy, fulfilling, satisfying life. And our children, we have 12 grandchildren, and a really tight, tight family bond. Even though we're a bonded family, my husband came with 3 children, and I came with 1, and they all lived with us, and have a beautiful family. I'm very proud of.
I haven't had a chance to read the book yet, but does the book talk about your experience as well as your dad's, or?
A little bit in the front. I share some about my alcoholism in the book, but the whole book is, I'm a co-author with Dad, because obviously with his brain injury, he couldn't keep the kind of whole thought going throughout, so I'm the one who did all the linking together. But there is a little bit about my story in there, but I wrote the whole thing in his voice.
Well, and Allison,
well, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to getting the book.
Oh, Allison, thank you. And I hope your children turn out okay.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Now, and Julie, that goes right into the question that I had, and that is, what? Hold on. Okay. There we go. I guess they hadn't hung their phone up yet. So what we wanted to talk about was, what is right with your life today, and what are those things? Are they specifically things tied to certain things in the book? So let's talk about what's right about your life, but at the same time, that are these also chapters that are in the book? Not that they're written about your life, but that some of the same things that you've gone through are some of the same things they can find in the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say the chapter on financial struggles. My husband and I are dealing with that, and we have reduced our debt by almost $100,000 in the last, I think it's 4 years. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to include the financial struggle, and not just, this is also a really tough time in our economy, and so many, many people are suffering and having to deal with the fact that, they can't pay every bill on time. Dave Ramsey is one of the contributors in this book, and we have his story of how he and his wife lost everything, but also, his encouragement of how you can get back on your feet, and the key is to, the goal is to end up debt-free and stay that way. And so My husband and I lost everything we had in the early 80s with the first oil crisis and savings and loan debacle. We were in property management business, and we came back out of that, but then we just ended up with too much debt again. So we are recovering from that. We have not charged anything to keep on our credit card in over 4 years, and we're seeing the positive progress of that commitment to get out of debt and to stay out of debt. So there's some good stories in that chapter of things that can help people, you know, through the tough parts of that as you first get started, because you do have to talk to a lot of people to make that deal happen. And let's see, what other things? I'm kind of looking through the chapters here. Of course, we've had the struggle, the marriage struggles. My husband and I were actually separated for a whole year. And fortunately, because we were members of a church that had a fellowship where everybody was concerned for everyone else, we got a lot of help and a lot of good counsel. And after a year of that kind of help, we were able to come back together and have, I believe, the kind of marriage God intended us to have from the very beginning. What we have after that struggle is so much better than anything we had the 11 years before the separation. But it was just a culmination of a lot of issues, baggage that both of us brought from our prior marriages, you know, that we brought into the new relationship, mm-hmm. and didn't understand how that was having a negative impact. But there are several, there are two really wonderful stories about couples who have, one, as I said earlier, overcame the infidelity of the husband. And what I love about this book is these are real people who are very happy to put their names to their stories.
Wow.
And you'll notice there are a couple of individuals who have a first name only,
mm-hmm.
and that was not their choice. That was the publisher's choice, so they wouldn't get sued because of some of the other people they were, you know, talking about.
Gotcha.
Who they also did not call by name. But everybody was willing to be transparent in the writing of this book as we shared their stories.
And I think that's phenomenal. But one of the things before we run out of time is that let's give everybody the website or the places where they can find this book. Because, again, if you're having struggles, and right now the way that our economy is, I think you're probably, you know, unique if you're not. I mean,
yeah.
You know, at this point,
I agree.
You know, so let us know where they can get it.
Okay.
The website.
Well, the book, it's available, of course, at Amazon.com, all your major bookstores. But we also have a Embrace the Struggle community. So you can go to EmbraceTheStruggle.com. And we have places for people to post and individuals share. We're hoping to set up different groups, people with special interest struggles they're dealing with, so they can get support from each other as well. So that's EmbraceTheStruggle.com, Amazon.com. You can get the book. There's a wonderful flash film movie about Dad embracing his struggle. It's a little 2-minute movie that is at the EmbraceTheStruggle.com that tells the story of his fall and how he chose to move forward in spite of it.
Yeah, and although I didn't get a chance to see that, I did get a chance to go to the website, and I saw the blog or the message board, which I think was great. So it's not only can you obviously read the book and glean something from that, but you could, if you have questions from it, you have a place where you can go. And I noticed that in some cases, some of the stories or some of the questions, your brother Tom was the one answering them. So.
Yes, and I answer as well. You know, and individuals who are members can answer too. So it's an interesting site, and it can be a great support if people will just use it. So it's there.
All right. Well, Julie, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a pleasure. Please give my best to your dad. Tell him that I am a fan. I am someone who has been to many of his seminars going back many years. So. And again, I'm just very thankful that you could come on and wish you all the best luck.
Well, thank you, Alan, and it's been a pleasure and a blessing. It really has.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was Julie Ziegler-Norman. And the book is called, now I just dropped that paper. Embracing the Struggle. So again, that's the book. If you get a chance, check it out. Check out the website. I did. I saw some of the questions that were there. And again, I think it's something that's very positive that everybody can benefit from. And speaking of things that are positive, I just want to share a little bit to everybody out there. I want you to know that I have received some very positive emails and phone calls, many of which are success stories from family who have had a teen graduate from one of the many programs that we in West Shield transport to. Although I happen to have the microphone, it is the educational consultants, the therapists, and specialized program personnel out there, listening or not, that are dedicating their time to the service of others. For that, I want you to know that I thank you for all that you do to make our lives better and the lives of young people who represent our next generation. Thank you. Those of you know who you are, and we also want everybody to know that if you have any questions, any comments, or suggestions for the show, please go to our website, www.answers4thefamilyblog.com. We await your comments, your suggestions, or if you just want to go there and listen to past shows, just feel free to do that. And remember, most of all, seek to catch someone doing something good every day. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.